Ankhamsa.
Aha
said, Ratanam, her brother, Devi, Mother Devaki, Kripana, helplessly, Karunam, piteously, Sati, the chaste lady, Asnusha Iyam Dafa, this child will be your daughter-in-law.
This child will be your daughter-in-law.
The wife of your future son.
The wife of your future son.
Kalyana.
Kalyana.
Oh, all auspicious one.
All auspicious one.
Striyam. A woman.
A woman.
Ma.
Ma.
Not.
Not.
Hantum.
Hantum.
To kill.
To kill.
Arasi.
You deserve.
So translation, Devaki helplessly, piteously appealed to Kamsa. My dear brother, all good fortune unto you. Don't kill this girl. She will be your daughter-in-law. Indeed, it is unworthy of you to kill a woman. So you can repeat. Devaki helplessly, piteously appealed to Kamsa.
My dear brother,
all good fortune unto you.
Fortune
don't kill this girl.
Don't kill this girl.
She will be your daughter-in-law.
She will be your daughter-in-law.
Indeed, it is unworthy of you.
Indeed, it is unworthy of you.
To kill a woman.
Kill a woman.
So purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivinanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Kamsa had previously excused Devaki because he thought that a woman should not be killed, especially when pregnant. But now, by the influence of Maya, he was prepared to kill a woman, not only a woman, but a small, helpless, newborn child. Devaki wanted to save her brother from this terrible sinful act. Therefore, she told him, "Don't be so atrocious as to kill a female child. Let there be all good fortune for you. Demons can do anything for their personal benefit, not considering what is pious or vicious." But Devaki, on the contrary, although safe because she had already given birth to her own son, Krishna, was anxious to save the daughter of someone else. This was natural for her. So, again, Tamaha Bhagavaram Vivi Kurpana Kurpanam Sati. Snukshayam Dabakalyana Striyam Mahantam Arhasi. So, Omagana Timadanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur of Meditam Yena Tasmai Shigurave Namaha. So, we know in the Vedic society there are several classes of persons who are supposed to be protected. And of course, women is one of the classes. Brahman is another class. Old people is another class. And children. Those are the four classes that have to be protected. So we find that generally in the Vedic society, people adhere to this. Let's take the example of Ashwatthama, who is a Brahman or a son of a Brahman. And actually, he was Brahma Bandhu, wasn't really a qualified Brahma, but still, he was considered the son of the Brahma. And so Ashwatthama did perform several heinous acts, I mean, that basically would have been worthy in any society for the death penalty. And he killed the five sleeping sons of the Pandavas. I mean, that's infanticide. Well, they weren't infants, but anyway, children's size, you know, whatever. And they were about 16 years old, 16, 17 years old. And he killed so many soldiers in their sleep. He went into the camp of the Pandavas while the Pandavas were away. And this is after the battlefield of Kurukshetra had been finished. The Pandavas had won. Duryodhana was lying, basically, with his hips crushed on the beach near the near the Ganges, actually. So he was lying there, and so this is such a heinous act that he had performed. And so he was captured, and not only that, but, you know, later on, you know, anyway, later on, he actually tried to kill Parikshit Maharaj. He wasn't named Parikshit Maharaj at that time, but he tried to kill Uttara's child who was within her womb by sending the Brahmastra. So not only did he kill children, not only did he kill soldiers without, in the improper situation, but he was actually wanting to perform an abortion. Actually, an abortion is some of the most heinous activities, abortion. The poor child who's in the womb, and he doesn't have any ability to fight off anybody. He just like is completely helpless. And this abortion, they go in and they cut the little baby to pieces. There's this type of abortion called DNC, where they cut the baby to pieces and suck him out with a vacuum cleaner. Not him, but the body, out with a vacuum cleaner. And there's even films of the baby trying to avoid the knife that is going after him. I mean, such a heinous activity. And they just like label it, you know, choice. Choice, you know, terrible. Anyway, so apart from that, so he tried to perform an abortion using the Brahmastra. And so when he was finally captured, there was conflicting instructions. Bhimsen, you know, was generally very angry. And he said, "Kill him!" And then you have Draupadi, who is saying, "Don't kill him." I mean, this is how compassionate she was, amazing. That an understanding of the Vedic tradition, that in spite of having her sons killed by this rascal, she said, "Don't kill him." And she gave several reasons. You know, you can't kill the son of a Brahmin, and also his mother is still alive. And so you would leave her defenseless. You know, that's also another important point in the Vedic culture, protecting women. So the son is important to protect the women. Although Ashwatthama later on didn't do anything to protect his mother. That's another point. His mother's name was Kripi. Kripi doesn't mean something bad. It means merciful, basically. A female merciful in this particular point. And she was the sister of Kripacharya. It was another personality that was there in the battle of Kurukshetra. So anyway, so there was this discussion, and Krishna said to Arjuna that you have to use your intelligence to follow all these instructions. You know, kill him and don't kill him simultaneously. So you couldn't kill the body. There's no injunction for Brahman's body to be killed, but he basically killed him by taking off the jewel from his forehead. The jewel was giving him good fortune. And Krishna also arranged to kill him further by cursing him that smelled so bad that nobody would go near him for like 5,000 years. That's pretty bad. No one will go near him. Just like recently they kicked someone off an airplane because they smelled too bad. A whole family, actually. So can you imagine like smelling so bad that nobody wants to go within 100 meters of you? For 5,000 years. He can't even talk to anybody. So anyway, so the point is, he wasn't supposed to be killed physically, bodily, because that's the Vedic system. And then as far as ladies not supposed to be killed, how polite people follow that. I mean, even Krishna was hesitating when the Putana came and was attempting to kill him. He closed his eyes. It's described by the Acharyas that he closed his eyes for a variety of reasons. You know, one is he was giving her a message. But another one was because the first lady, or the first demon that was going to be killed, was a woman. And he was very reluctant to do that. Of course, her being a demoness sort of overrode that particular principle of not killing a woman. You know, someone's a demoness, can threaten others, has killed a lot of children, you got to protect the children. You know, sometimes there's overriding principles. Because had she not been killed, then, I mean, a lot of things, a lot of problems would have occurred. She would have gone on with her nefarious activities, but she wouldn't have killed Krishna because that was impossible. But she would have gone on with her nefarious activities, so Krishna purified her by sucking out the life air from her breast, and then ultimately she went back to home, back to God, and so that was complete mercy. And same thing in Lord Rama's pastimes. In Lord Rama's pastimes, the first demon he killed was this lady, Tadaka. And it's interesting that he and Lakshman were with Visramitra Muni, and they were going through this forest. It was like the forbidden forest. It was previously a very nice forest, you know, with beautiful trees and animals and everything, but it was completely devastated because this Tadaka had eaten everything and destroyed everything in sight, decimated the forest. So what happened is that Ram woke her up with the twang of his bow, and she came out, and she was just like, "Who is that?" And she started to attack Ram. And Ram was very reluctant to do anything with her. And Visramitra Muni said, you know, even if she's a woman, kill her, because she's done all these things. So Ram still was reluctant, and eventually, of course, he did kill her. And so you find this extreme reluctance there. And what to speak of the battle of Kurukshetra, where you have this Shikhandi, and it's an interesting story which I've told before, but it bears telling again, that Shikhandi, of course, in his previous life, was Amba. Amba was one of the three daughters of the King Kashi, Amba, Ambika, Ambalika, who were kidnapped by Grandfather Bhishma to marry his brother Vichitravirya. So, two of them agreed to marry Vichitravirya, and Amba, the oldest one, didn't agree because she had already been promised and fell in love with Shalva. And so Bhishma sent her back to Shalva. She went back to Shalva. I'm trying to tell the story real quickly. She went back to Shalva. Shalva refused to accept her because he certainly didn't want to accept, like, Kshatriya business, very proud. He didn't want to accept a girl that had been taken away by another man. It was just like below his, you know, ability. It was a false prestige. It's so embarrassing. Like Krishna says to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, but one who has been honored, dishonor is worse than death. So it would have been a dishonor. Of course, you know, the poor girl, you know, that's another thing, who had fallen in love with him, and he had promised her that he would marry her, and so he sort of relinquished his promise in order to satisfy his false pride. So anyway, so he sent her back to Grandfather Bhishma. Grandfather Bhishma said, "I've taken a vow of brahmacharya. I'm not getting married to anyone, especially I'm not going to marry you because you hate my guts." And obviously, that's a no-brainer. And she got very upset. To make a long story short, she tried to enlist Parashuram, Grandfather Bhishma's spiritual master, to convince Grandfather Bhishma to marry her. Parashuram, even after fighting with Grandfather Bhishma, was unable to convince Bhishma to marry her. And so she took a vow, basically, to cause his death in the next life. So she takes birth in the next life as the daughter of Drupada. And Drupada thinks that she's a boy because Lord Shiva has told him that she's a boy. And so he gets her married to another girl. And the two girls, and the second girl gets married to Shikhandini, that's her name at this particular juncture. That girl gets frustrated because she doesn't want to marry a girl. And she tells her father. Her father gets ready. Her father's a king. Father gets ready to attack Drupada. She, that is Shikhandini, runs into the forest, crying, feeling guilty that she's the cause of all this problem. And she meets a yaksha. The yaksha gives her his masculinity in exchange for her femininity. And she goes back, or he goes back, because she can't be at this particular point, and everything seems to be all right. But because the yaksha upsets Kuvera, the king of the yakshas, then the yaksha gets cursed that he can't get his masculinity back until Shikhandi dies. So that's a long story. Make a long story short. So anyway, so Shikhandi goes to the battle of Kurukshetra as a man. But because Grandfather Bhishma recognizes, having spies everywhere, because he knows what's happening from one lifetime to another, knows how she was transformed into a man, he refuses to fire his arrows at him, her, because he understands the principle. You don't, he's taken a vow, never to kill a woman or to kill someone who was previously a woman. And so Arjuna uses him, her, as a human shield so that he can fire all these arrows and put Bhishma on his bed of arrows and ultimately cause Bhishma to give up the fight. So very interesting how important it is to protect women. So the reason for that is given, one reason actually is given in the Bhagavad Gita. Because Arjuna is searching for reasons not to fight. You know, he's just like grasping at straws. Not exactly straws, but he's grasping at Vedic reasons not to fight. Some of them were not so Vedic. One of the reasons that wasn't Vedic was, you know, if I kill all these people, how could I enjoy the kingdom? That's not a Vedic excuse. That's a completely self-centered excuse. But he was putting his excuses in the guise of Vedic excuses. And one of the Vedic excuses he would use was that if we kill all these men, then there'll be all these ladies who are unprotected. And if these ladies are unprotected, guess what? There's going to be all these unwanted progeny. Unwanted progeny, it's called Varna Sankara. Basically it means mixed. Varna Sankara, I mean mixed varnas. You know, in other words, actually Prabhupada said that about us in the Western world. We're mixed varnas of unknown origin. That's true. That's true. Of course, we do have some Vedic origin because those of us who are partially European blood, we were kicked out of India by Parshuram. Anyway, whatever. It's better than being killed. If someone did a genetic test on us, they would say, oh, you were kicked out of India by Parashuram many years ago. So, like you can send some saliva in and have it tested and they can tell you who your ancestors were. Interesting. I don't want to do that because it has nothing to do with the soul, it's just the body. Who cares where the body came from? Right? It doesn't really matter. Just like if you have a car, who cares whether your car was manufactured in Detroit or Atlanta? You just care whether it works and you use it for a purpose, isn't it? People are really into this genetic stuff. Who cares? As long as the stupid car works. Doesn't use too much petrol. So for protecting the ladies, it's important that you have kids who are taken care of because the mother is actually the most important person taking care of the child, bringing up the child. And if a child is brought up and without a mother, it's a disaster, absolute disaster. The father can be off working and go to join the Marines or something. But the mother actually shapes the child. And so the mother's care not only who she chooses as a husband, obviously it has to be someone of the same varna, but a mother's care shapes the psychology of the child. And otherwise the child will have so many psychological problems if they don't have the care of a mother. Really, it's truly nurturing of a mother. So that's why protection of women is very, very important in society. And also necessary because basically the ladies generally are not as physically strong as the men. That's one thing. And also there's an emotional component that ladies have. Forgive me if I'm offending any lady. Emotional component means that the ladies are very emotional. More than the men. And the reason for that, physiologically, is that the two sides of the brain are very much connected, more interconnections between the two sides of the brain than with the men. So the men can be very cold-hearted. They just shut off that side of the brain. Okay. Click. Off. Okay. And I mean, just actually, modern science bears out the Vedic injunctions. I'll give you another example of how modern science bears out the Vedic injunctions. Let's not talk about protecting the cows. That's another element in society that needs to be protected. So, why should cows be protected? I mean, why not protect horses? Why not protect pigs? Why not? I mean, of course, we don't want to hurt any living entity. Why not protect cockroaches? I mean, why is this, you know, concentration on cows? Well, first of all, cows are in the mode of goodness. But beyond that, it's very interesting how Prabhupada talked about how milk was necessary. And I'm a vegan, so I'm still speaking like this. How milk is necessary for developing finer brain tissues. So, why is that? So, look at science. I'll explain exactly why scientifically it's necessary. And nothing else supplies the ingredients. So I'm still going to be vegan. So anyway, so the reason being scientific, and here's a scientific explanation for you. There's something that everybody needs for their brains, nervous systems, cells. It's called DHA. And EPA. EPA doesn't mean the Environmental Protection Agency of the U.S. government. These are amino acids. You know, let's not get into all the details what an amino acid is, but just say it's an amino acid. So an amino acid, these amino acids are absolutely necessary for developing brain cells. And guess what? It doesn't come from any other food. I mean, I guess you could eat fish, not that you should. You can take a poor little fish and make oil from it, like nowadays, isn't it? They get fish oil. Yuck. And of course, by doing that, you're also ingesting all these heavy metals, too, because the fish and the, I'm just explaining scientifically, which is probably what I like to do all the time. The fish are actually on the highest level, one of the highest levels in the food chain in the ocean. And on each level, there is an ingestion of these toxic metals and other things in the ocean. And it gets concentrated as you move up the food chain. You understand? You know, you got the one-celled little creatures, and you got the algaes, and then you got multi-celled creatures, and they, you know, jivasa, jiva. One living entity exists by eating another living entity. So you move up the food chain, it gets concentrated. So it's not really a good way to achieve or get your amino acids. So it turns out, it's interesting too, very interesting, because I was just studying this, that the cow doesn't produce amino acids, like omega-3s, especially omega-3. The cow doesn't produce it. But when the cow grazes naturally, the cow picks it up and concentrates it in the system and it comes out of the milk. Human beings can't produce that particular amino acid, the omega-3s, except for lactating ladies, you know, who have children. They can produce it. But other than that, it has to come from cows. The cows that are grazing naturally. The cows that are not grazing naturally, they don't produce this omega-3s and amino acids, which is interesting. You saw the milk you buy in the grocery store, it doesn't provide that nutrition. It doesn't. And this is scientific. I'm not just like throwing my own opinion out at people. But what I'm pointing out is that science backs up the Veda conjunctions. If you go to science and you really look with an unbiased mind, you'll see it's backed up. So anyway, so cows that graze, that forage, let's use the word forage, because traditionally, let's say Krishna 5,000 years ago, he wasn't taking a tractor or a backhoe and clearing all the trees out of the forest. Like we have modern pastures, you understand, where you fertilize with so many artificial ingredients. There's NPN, whatever, NPK, nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, whatever you put in the soil. Very artificial. The cows would forage amongst the trees in the forest, and like that, and that's where the microbes would actually grow the omega-3 fatty acids. I mean, it's interesting for me. I don't know if anyone else finds it interesting. Hopefully I'm not boring everybody. So the modern dairies, no, they're not producing that. But when Krishna was present, because they graze naturally, the cows produce omega-3s. No, okay. So therefore, cow protection is essential to the people. And not only cow protection, like sticking everybody in a dairy, not everybody, every cow, but their bodies too, in a dairy and feeding them artificial grains and things like that, that really doesn't do it. They have to be grazed naturally. That's the cow protection. And then the rest of society can get the nutrition that they need for feeding their brains. Now, of course, the natural question some of you may want to ask, what do I do? I'm not grazing cows, and I'm a vegan, so, you know, do I have no brains? So I have to take so many extraordinary measures to make up the difference, which is not practical for the whole world. One of those extraordinary measures is I'm taking algae pills, which have that omega, which is not a real natural thing. It's produced in a factory, and then, you know, it's just a... Anyway, so the point I'm making is that cow protection, you can see how it's absolutely essential for people to be spiritual, to have a spiritually based culture. Like Prabhupada said, develop the finer brain tissues that will help one, lead one to think about self-realization. And so, so we talked about protecting women, protecting cows. Let's talk about protecting old people. That's an advertisement. The reason you protect old people... Oops, it's not time yet. The reason old people should be protected is that they are a fount of wisdom for the rest of society. The young people, especially when you're 20, you don't know what the hell is good for you. Yeah, you know, people get married to the wrong person. You know, there's love, 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 love. All you need is love. You see so many of these love marriages. Nowadays in India, of course, there's so many of these love marriages. And there's so much divorce now in India because people just don't know, can't make decisions in life. So in the traditional cultures, not only Vedic culture, but also in America, you know, where, South America, wherever, you had a village of the elders, the village elders. Even, you know, in the American Indian culture, it's like that. The elders were respected. They were a fount of wisdom. And you go to them for advice. And that's why you protect old people. For that reason. And also, you know, another reason is one day you will be an old person. whether you like it or not. And I don't like it. So one day you will be an old person, and so, you know, if you don't have that culture, then there's nothing for you in the future. So protecting old people, and then you have, of course, children, because if children are not properly protected or traumatized, then their whole lives are spoiled, and their whole lives they're dealing with so many psychological illnesses. I mean, I have experienced, not that my own life, but in dealing with so many people who come to the Krishna Conscious Movement and they weren't properly guided or protected when they were children. And we're not just talking about protecting them from physical harm. We're protecting them from bad association. We're protecting them emotionally, giving them emotional protection. You know, sometimes people say about our Gurukula or about the devotees, you should let your children be exposed to everything. You've heard this before. Let them be exposed. Let them go to the slaughterhouse. You know, we're not talking about literal slaughterhouse. We're talking about, anyway, modern education. One time, in Janmashtami, I had the devotees do a play on the modern school slaughterhouses. Were you there, Chambaka, when they had the devotees do it? No. It was really interesting. We had Tunga Vidya sort of like guide the kids in doing a play, and the teacher was teaching, what are we learning, children? Illicit sex, intoxication, gambling, meat eating, Haribol. Yeah, they didn't say Haribol. So, but you protect the children from those influences because children function on the basis of social pressure. And you know, if you want to fit in, I remember how bad I felt because I didn't fit in. I was in school and I was chanting. No, I wasn't chanting Hare Krishna, but that's a kid. But I didn't want to, wasn't attracted to sports, you know, learning all the football teams or whatever. I wasn't attracted to wearing bell-bottom pants, and everybody would make fun of me. Just because, and you know, I had glasses, you know, at that time, not many people had glasses. And I just got called four eyes and everything so many times. It was just like traumatic. But I didn't, still didn't fit in. It just made me rebellious. But anyway, so, you know, so the reason you don't expose the children to everything is for the same reason you don't send the children into the certain wards of the hospital where there's contagious diseases. You say, all right, we'll send you in to the whatever ward, you know. Of course, there's so many contagious diseases. No, AIDS is not contagious like that. You know, you protect them. Even when doctors go into a contagious disease ward, they don't say, I'm just going to expose myself. They wear a mask, they throw away their gown later on, or, you know, burn it, or sterilize it. Hare Krishna. So it's very important to protect children from bad association. Really important. It's not that we're denying them something. We're actually giving them the ability later on when they confront the world, when they have the ability to discriminate. Because children generally don't have that ability to discriminate. They're not all like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who could take a vow when he was 5 years old never to eat a mango for the rest of his life. I mean, that's a rare thing, and I have not met such a child in the Hare Krishna movement yet. So anyway, so these are cultural things that are very important to maintain not only a Krishna conscious society, but a sane, pious society. All right.